All right, Pearson's Chi-Square. Pearson's Chi-Square is really important because increasingly we are using categorical dependent variables. For the longest time, Chi-Square was tucked in the back of the book, if it was in the book at all, and ANOVA ran the world for experiments, and correlation ran the world for non-experiments, and then it started to occur to us there's no reason for this. There's a few research areas that actually suffered from over-quantifying things. Law psych, particularly jury studies. First thing a jury does is decide guilty or not guilty. And if they do anything else, they have more categories, not a different kind of thing. Guilty, not guilty by reason of insanity, not guilty by, not guilty by, not guilty by, just plain old not guilty. Doesn't suddenly make it quantitative just because there's multiple categories. But Lord knows that group had been trained largely as cognitive or social psychologists where ANOVA was the shit. And they did whatever they could to turn that guilty, not guilty into something quantitative so they could wedge it into an ANOVA. Confidence of guilt, proportional certainty of guilt. Make 15 guilt decisions and add them up to give a quantitative number. One of the problems was we weren't getting a right result. We weren't getting results that translated to the qualitative decision that's made in real life. So I want you to be comfortable with Chi-Square. I want you to be able to bounce back and forth between a categorical dependent variable and a quantitative dependent variable that are representing the same construct. So you can move back and forth, those results being portrayed as a mean comparison in an ANOVA and a pattern of data in a Chi-Square, and maybe even a relationship between two linear variables in a correlation. So, in a contingency table, we have two categorical variables and a mark for each, in this case, puppy. Sam is a work puppy who likes to play tug. Work puppy, tug, that looks like Sam right there. Cutie, isn't he? You're going to do the same thing. You're going to look at this and you're going to try and figure out if there's a relationship. And because we are likely to argue about whether the relationship in the sample is strong enough to conclude there's a relationship in the population, we are going to have null hypothesis significance tests to decide, is that sample relationship strong enough to conclude there's a population relationship? That's all it is. That's the real reason we have significance tests, is we can't look at a pattern of data and agree. We can't look at two means and decide if the mean difference is big enough to trust. People who want a mean difference tend to say yes. People who don't want a mean difference tend to say no, and then they argue. Does this surprise anyone? People look at the same thing and interpret it differently and argue. If that surprises you, start watching more news channels. Correlation, chi-square, ANOVA, nah. It's always the same thing. That's why we depend upon significance tests. Confidence intervals, effect sizes, and other things are all designed to help. Power analysis, all designed to help. But it's all because what we yearn for, what we long for, if you'll excuse the phrase, what we lust after, is certainty in a probabilistic world. And so what we have done is we have quantified how much certainty we need to pretend we have complete certainty. It's the old thing that new judges get told by old judges. Here's what you have to do. You have to learn how to act like you're 99% certain when you're only 51% certain. Because you are invited to render a binary decision. And that's what we're doing here. We're trying to take all the information that's in a couple of means and standard deviations, scatter plot, contingency table, and render that down to the binary decision. Is the relationship between the variables in the sample strong enough to act like there's a relationship in the population? When we don't particularly trust each other, so we want a form of standardization. And we want to agree ahead of time, what does enough mean? That's why we have p-values. That's 0.05. We have decided, largely as a group, typically, that that's our definition of enough. We're going to hold everybody to that. So all we got to do is get to that. That's the role of significance testing. When we're looking at a contingency table, we're trying to figure out if there's a relationship or not. And the big challenge there is, how much relationship is enough to be convinced? There's a relationship here. Those numbers are not all the same. Not much of a relationship there. Is it enough? Well, I really want there to be a relationship, so yes. I don't want there to be a relationship, so no. When we find variables that do, or when we find contingency tables that do have some variegation, then what we are looking for is what rows go with what columns. This, both of these portrayals are what are called symmetrical patterns of data. Now let me tell you what that means, because you're looking at it and you're thinking, what? They're symmetrical if you tilt your head. If you tilt your head to the right, the green one is symmetrical. If you tilt your head to the left, the blue one is symmetrical. What is meant by symmetrical is that one diagonal has the big numbers and the other diagonal has the small numbers. That's what's meant by symmetrical, which you will explain 700 times in lab. The reason for the confusion is that everybody knows that's not symmetrical. It's taken from a matrix algebra term called skew symmetric, which means that if you take away the diagonal, the off diagonals are symmetrical to each other. And then it got winnowed down to symmetrical. Not the meanest thing that was done to chi-square over the years. I'll tell you more stories later. So here we have cats prefer crackers and dogs prefer chips. We good? Relatively more cats. Well, that's a mess, isn't it? All right, so I got a little bit here. 17 to 13 and 16 to 14. But once again, this is that idea of how strong does the relationship in the sample have to be to decide there's a relationship in the population. Here we have, cats like chips, dogs like crackers. Pretty strong, we're good. And here is a non-symmetrical data set. Cats prefer crackers, dogs, nah. Dogs are of two minds. I like crackers, I like chips. I have one dog who really, really has discovered he likes carrots and snow peas. Do you know how he discovered this? Raiding the rabbit's food bowl. A couple of nights a week, the rabbit spends 3 or 4 hours in the kitchen on a pad. It's pretty easy to contain a rabbit because they don't like slippy floors. So you put a pad down, stays on the pad. Put food down. That's a little harder because Ernie comes in and says, oh wait, crackers. I like crackers. The rabbit doesn't like crackers. So they're fine, they get along fine. But carrots and snow peas, they fight. They get head to head and they push each other back and forth over the crackers. It is hysterical. It's like siblings. They've agreed just how much violence is allowed before mom intervenes. I'm not sure if we only get weird pets or if they turn weird when they come into the house.